Thanks to all of you for coming out. I'm almost tall, aren't I? I'm so excited. There you go. Okay, is this good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So exciting to be here. I'm going to read tonight from Speak Now, This Charm. But first, I just echo all the thanks, because we all say all the thanks. All the thanks. Thank you. And then Speak Now, This Charm is my latest book. And I've been reading around town from this book. This is kind of my swan song for this little blurb part of the readings for the first book coming out. And so I'm going to just gonna whip through a lot of poems tonight and see what you think. Speak now this charm, that phrase, is an Anglo-Saxon admonition. So if you study the Anglo-Saxon coda, there's actually a section called Speak Now This Charm. And happily enough, those lucky Anglo-Saxons had a charm for almost everything. So if your child became infected with water elf disease, then you speak now this charm. If the bees flew from your hive, speak now this charm. If someone stole your cattle and you want to get that thief, speak now this charm. And I decided that during the pandemic shutdown, it was so awful that I wanted to just write a set of charms for us, for various things that we're now facing in the world. At the same time, these poems are all written in the shape of a box. Sorry, this is so long, but then I'll stop on that. So the box poem, that shape, is the form of the poem, but also the box as an image is throughout the work in the book. And I just wanted to call that out because as I was growing up, I had two sisters, there were three girls, and I was the only one that survived to adulthood. Two of my sisters didn't make it. They had childhood diseases. And in consequence, boxes became very salient for me because it's weird to see your sisters put in boxes. So I began to see boxes everywhere during the shutdown. The TV box was suddenly way important in life. The window box was a whole event. The walls of the rooms we were shut into was a box. So let's start with the poems. Bodies. I've been thinking about your body and the box they put it in, wondering if you're still in there, if a hand under the lip of that box might be a way of climbing in, of being in there with you. Because once we were sisters, we thought our bodies were eternal. And sweetheart, isn't that every girl's mistake? My hands ache to touch your face, to brush the bangs from your eyes. When they took you, when they closed the lid on the box, I wished that I could be a button on your blouse. Autobiography. Am I a stolid soul because my mother was a big tree standing? In memory, her body's redacted to tallness and the slow shuffle from sink to stove that was once a North Dakota folk dance. She taught me what she could, a few Bible verses and rules she learned at school. But I could never tell if that was meant as blessing or blame. Still, this poem isn't about my mother. My life's my own, the uncut movie of 1,000 reckless decisions made on the run. I tell people that I'm nothing like my mother, but that's not true. I wake up every morning knowing I will always be a woman camped on both sides of a river. So I've had very positive experiences in hospitals, and I know that's unusual, but I have. And I have a great memory of being a young mother with this newborn child, standing before this, you know, floor to ceiling window, looking out on the world where the cars were rushing and the problems were happening. And everything had to be handled. But I was just in this world where I just had this baby, and that was all I needed to do. And this poem is called Asylum. They've taken my scissors and dimmed the lights, leaving me here, three floors above the street. From the window, I watch the school buses releasing the children. I trace the paths of dog walkers crisscrossing the park. From here, I can spy on the street cleaners who ogle the teenage girls heading for home. So this is it. The world's now in the hands of those who still want it. People who can drink their coffee black. People who read the daily news. I'm better off here, a geranium that needs tending. Soothing nurses glide down these halls, bringing gifts of orange juice and People magazine. Already, I've learned to love the sails of their crisp white hats. Jeff, see, you're a poet, you can do this. Jeff. My husband asks if I would like a Viking funeral. A game we play. If I die first, if you do, when this bond is cut, we say, then laugh. And that fiery Viking ship does have appeal. But if I go first, I say, I want to be a tree, that burial thing they advertise in fancy magazines. Ashes to alder seems civilized, yes? And this is how we do it. Handling the 70s, the 80s, keeping up the gag, talking death, the way you handle eggs when you make meringue. Tapping the shell on the edge of the cup, creating a separation, the yolk from the white, then whipping the one into an airy castle, so light and unlikely. There's a terrific Serbian poet you may or may not know named Vasco Popa. And he wrote a whole book called The Little Box. He didn't write in box form, but he wrote with the box as a character. And he was a great inspiration to me working through this book. So this poem is called Devotion for Vasco Popa. He loved the box. I tell you, no one loved the box like Popa. Let the box live in you, he told me. Let it sing your song with its wooden tongue. Because the box is a marvel. It's filled with gifts as sweet as raisins, gifts as charming as a postcard from Ghent. But the box, Popa warned, is still difficult. To see what it holds, you must empty its emptiness. Only then will the box share its secrets, because box begets box begets box. For this reason, Popa counseled caution. Don't play with the box, he warned me. Don't invite its dangerous attentions. Remember, the box wants something. Don't give it even a tiny bite. When I can't sleep, I imagine my body as a box. As a series of boxes. I imagine my body as box cars, a train stalled in the yard, each box requiring attention and unloading. And there's a way to do this. I've read about that in magazines. Still, I cannot quiet the body's voice. If you must think of me, the body says, don't imagine me as the box your mind is. I don't have to be that haunted or hemmed in by our history. See how I breathe without thought, in and out, in and out. That's because I have a life of my own, a buoyancy that defies our circumstances. Your mind's like a late Rothko, the body says. I'm like something painted by Matisse. Those of you who have grown children, or in my case, grown grandchildren, will have been through the process this poem describes. What I do now. I get up early to investigate the needs of the day. I turn myself into a wall, a blank, a separate thing. I give up being the key that fits their locks. I embrace new strategies. Do not explain. Do not meddle. Do not bargain. Invisible rivers still flow between us, but I know they too have been granted a secret life. So I unlearn the way the one walks, the way her sister turns her head. About their hearts, I do not speak. Like apple trees, they've sunk roots into their own meadows. Therefore, joy. Also, this vague, disembodied grief. I must pack away my craving for their childish, vulgar laughter. So as citizens, we're always trying to figure out our relationship to events past and present and actually future now as well. And the Holocaust is surely one of those. And I spent time trying to do that and I failed miserably. And in the course of that, I came across a painting by Marc Chagall. It's a painting called The Falling Angel. And the dates of the painting are 1923 to 1947. So I was immediately struck by, that's a long time to revisit a painting. And through those years, that's pretty much two wars. And this poem resulted, Remembrance Day. I took the photo from the box and looked at what seemed to be a camp and six shapes near the edge of a forest. I was hunting details that told a story. Don't we all want the narrative? And those shadow-drenched shapes could be prisoners or soldiers or even small trees. As my eyes tired, the shapes seemed smudged. They wavered like smoke. Were they becoming angels? No, it wasn't that. But I think I understand now why Chagall kept reworking The Falling Angel. Versions of heaven give way to versions of hell. And then those are painted over by a personal momentary bliss. This is not, I know, the official story, but it's the truth. Sorrow-hued, this box was built to house my sister's bony limbs. The bones of the box meant to shelter hers, but by and by, even boxes decayed. So the body that housed her once hot heart will lay exposed, returned to clay. The priest spoke words. A cold rain fell. All over the cemetery, other families came, bringing their children in their boxes. I listened to the wind and to the mourners. All those mothers bringing children, they were so busy praising heaven, those mothers. They sang and sang. So I sang too. The husband coughs, and Pittsburgh's surly skies respond. On TV, the weatherwoman adjusts her tiny mic. She predicts another inch, another cough. So we cancel the party, but the paper plates and party cups are still talking trash in the kitchen. Gas bills, bank statements, damp clothes in the dryer. There's a lot to do, but today I hit pause and my eyes opened. Suddenly, I could see it, the cosmic time drip, our portion eking its way through this mindless corset of days. Outside, there was a parade, 6 Giacometti figures, each one leaning into her own particular weather. So people like yes and no questions and black and white versions, and I think the universe is a lot messier than that. So I wrote this poem for some of my fellows who might as well think that the universe is messier than that. It's in response to me being called out as an atheist by my minister when I was in 8th grade. And it seemed to me that he was not getting the nuance of my spiritual situation. Dear universe, is this now? Are you now too? I'm up here in seat 18B, jetting through an obsidian sky. One more poet tapping on her laptop, trying to think in the language of insight and surprise. After all these poems, after religion and children and 2 husbands and some pretty good therapy, you'd think I'd have nailed a few things down. But to quote my computer, this search has returned no results. So tonight, dear heavens, dear mystery, I am reduced to beseeching. O Lord of absence and dark matter, O master of quarks and these immense, uncountable stars, are we just mice in the garden? Or to put it another way, what is this place? Speak now this charm. Lastly, we are all summer grass. So it's hard to say, were you in the box? Were you a box? Did you settle into the earth or fly up to the trees? At the chapel, there was a window where I pressed my mouth to the glass to get close to you one last time. But there was no getting at you. No getting past the body fault, the broken box, no way to even place a leaf on your face. Standing by your grave, I watched the bloody sun go flat and become horizon. So I guess there's that, a certain bigness once the grief burns off. Thank you.